check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday, April 22nd, 2021. It's the Beating the Book podcast. Gil Alexander live from Circa, which I don't believe we've ever done a podcast from Circa before. We did it from the D all football season. But obviously, for those watching the video clip on this, look at the background. Look how great this place is. It's unbelievable here at Circa Sports. And thrilled to have an all-star cast talk about the draft. First of all, my partner on Primetime Action, which we do Monday through Friday night, sometimes on MSG Plus, sometimes not. It's Matt Brown. How you doing, Matt?
Doing well, doing well. During football season, MSG Plus. Yes. Outside of that,
That's how we should start saying it, right? That's how exactly how we should start saying it. And then with the Circa backdrop, the nighttime dusk Circa backdrop from the Deep Dive podcast, it's Drew Dinsick. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. We're a week out from the draft. This time of year is super fun. Love all of the looking into the crystal ball of who's going to do what in the draft. This is what it's all about.
Dude, I cannot wait. We are exactly 1 week away from the NFL draft, and we'll go through everybody's favorite picks here, favorite props that they've already bet, obviously, on this show. I saved the best for last. I was going to introduce him first, but he went off camera for a second, so I wanted to make sure he had time to get in his seat. He is the host of Lombardi Line at VSiN. He has a podcast of his own with Adnan Virk called GM Shuffle. The name of the book is Gridiron Genius. He writes for The Athletic. He has worked with all the greats. Not all the greats. Again, no Joe Gibbs. But Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick, Al Davis. It's Michael Lombardi. Thank you for doing this, Michael. Appreciate it.
No problem. It's nice to be here. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Michael, let me start with you. Before we get into all our props, let me start with the top of the draft. Because in many respects, this is, I think, the most confusing, maybe not confusing, but the draft that I probably know the least about, 1 through 6, a week out in recent memory. If you are okay with Trevor, not okay with, but if you believe Trevor Lawrence is absolutely going number one, by the way, the surest thing in this draft is Trevor Lawrence tweeting out that he's already donating to Jacksonville charity. So he is going number one. If you believe Zach Wilson is going number two, though, to the Jets, where a week out do you stand? And you've been very consistent about this on 3. Let's start there.
You know, I think let's start with this idea for the better. If you want to play props and you want to use mock drafts as kind of a guideline for your prop betting, I think you have to be strategic in looking at each mock. For example, if you want to know what the Rams are going to do in the draft, or perhaps San Francisco, read Peter Schrager's mock, because he's pretty wired in those organizations. If you want to know what the Jets are going to do or what Baltimore's going to do, then make sure you read Daniel Jeremiah's mock. If you want to know what some other teams do, read Charlie Casserly's mock. These are the mocks you read because they'll give you a peek into what the teams are really thinking. They're not going to be perfect on all the drafts. So let's take Peter Schrager's draft, mock draft. He just released it April 20th, right? He has, exactly the way I see it, he has Mac Jones coming to 3, which is what I think is going to happen. I think it's a debate in that organization between Trey Lance and Mac Jones. I think the head coach really likes Mac Jones. He likes his intelligence. He likes his ability to control the game at the line of scrimmage. He sees a combination of Matt Ryan, Matt Schaub, Kirk Cousins, all those players wrapped into Mac Jones. The people on the outside of the building don't see that, and some in the inside of the building don't see that. They favor Trey Lance. So I think, you know, if I were a betting man, I would bet Mac Jones at 3. I would hedge my bet with something on Trey Lance as well.
Interesting that Justin Fields was not in that conversation for you. By the way, Peter Schrager has Travis Etienne going to Washington at 19, so do not look at Peter Schrager's draft for Washington-specific picks. Let me just say that.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's why I think you have to be really careful. You have to pick certain teams that you know guys are really wired on, right? You know, go through Peter Schrager's Twitter feed. What stories does he break that are true based on, like for me, like people, like they, if I say something about the Patriots, people tend to believe it because they know I talk to the head coach. So, you know, Carolina, my son works there, you know, but not all drafts, not all mocks are perfect. But when you have a guy like Charlie Casserly, who does a good job of collecting information, you got to look at all his information and where he has guys go, and you can utilize that draft, that mock as well.
Drew, number 3, you see it a little differently, or at least you read the tea leaves differently anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's really funny how there's sort of an asymmetry about the coverage of the draft and where actual value betting lies. Because if you actually think that there's a value play to be made on three, you're probably deluding yourself. I would say that there are lots of value draft, you know, value propositions down the board at this point. And you know, I personally, while I completely agree with, you know, Mike's take overall that there, you have to do a blended approach where you kind of evaluate the quality of information across all the mocks, depending on who's connected to who, I would still point to San Francisco and say they would be at the top of the board for me of a team that has mastered sort of the psyops, the disinformation campaign, and the obscuring, you know, what they ultimately intend to do. And I think this is probably the most important pick that's going to happen under the Lynch-Shanahan regime. And the idea that they even would have told somebody is that they are especially close to, like Pete Schrager, what their true intention is, I think is, I have suspicion about that. And, you know, as I look, there's a reason that Zach Wilson is like minus 5,000 to go to the Jets, but Mac Jones is like minus 150 to go to the Niners. You know, the Jets are not trying to hide information. They're being very out in the open with it, and they leak all of the time. You know, it's relatively well known when we get to the draft cycle who the Jets like, but I would point to the Niners even last year and Peter Schrager's mock. He had them taking, I think Ruggs at 13 overall last year. The consensus mocks across the boards where they loved Ruggs, they loved Judy, they loved Lamb. They were going to get one of those three guys. And pick 13 got to them. Lamb and Judy were available. And rather than make those picks, they traded down and took Kinlaw to replace DeForest Buckner. And it was like, you couldn't find a single mock in the space that linked them to Kinlaw. And it was like, okay, they did a very good job of sort of deceiving the fact that they really didn't have eyes for any of those three guys with their first pick. And in their second pick, they did use on a wide receiver, and it was somebody that nobody saw coming in Brandon Ayuk. So I would say that Shanahan is one of the guys that I would put the least amount of confidence in anyone saying that they've heard with any kind of credibility that they know what he would do. I've bet into Fields at three pretty heavily at this point. I'm prepared to take it as a loss. I've been prepared to take it as a loss since doing it in the first place, because I've just been like, I have a tough time swallowing how a team gives up so much future capital to move up and take Mac Jones when the likelihood he was going to be there much later in the draft is, you know, it didn't make sense mathematically. It didn't make sense in terms of the value of that pick for me that would be Mac Jones. And similarly, Trey Lance, you know, if you're leveraging all of this future capital, and this goes beyond just pick three with the Niners, but if you're leveraging so much of your future capital for a player that started 1 year of FCS football, like, you've started the clock on the end of your tenure, right? If that pick doesn't work out and there's maybe a 50-50 chance that it doesn't, that's it. That's the end. You know, you've passed on a guy like Fields who I think has a higher floor. You may have captured the next, the next great quarterback in Lance, but if it doesn't work out, you know, that's it for you. And I have a tough time seeing that people would, you know, leverage that much future capital for unknown quantities like this. Lastly, the fit between Fields and San Francisco, in my opinion, is so strong, and the connection to through the quarterback collective between Shanahan and Fields going back to high school, and that he's a known quantity for them, on top of the fact that he was an Ironman in the semifinal game in the college football semifinal game, played through broken ribs. And here's Shanahan, he's dealt with RG3, who is a generational talent. His legs go in year one. He can't stay on the field. He gets Jimmy Garoppolo from the Patriots. Jimmy Garoppolo looks amazing down the stretch that first season they trade for him. He can't stay on the field. He's made of glass. You know, so the idea that Shanahan's kind of, I would err on the side of a guy that is an Iron Man that's going to take the field, even with broken ribs, I think is real. And, the only reason I could think that they would run this sort of misinformation campaign, the psyops on the football media landscape would just be to keep the Jets locked in on Wilson at two, because I personally think the Fields Wilson the space between those two players and their potential in the NFL is very thin. And Zach Wilson, in my mind, is a higher candidate for being an NFL bust than Fields is. But you know, that's kind of where I've landed. But with all that said, it's the most fun topic to talk about in the draft prop space. But there are lots of better options for finding betting value.
For sure. By the way, I
would say this. I would say this, Gil. I'd like to rebut that. Please. I would say this. If you really understand Kyle Shanahan and you understand what he's looking for, you can't think it's Justin Fields. If you understand, if you've had conversations with Kyle Shanahan about what he wants in his offense, about the mechanics of throwing the football, about understanding what's going to happen at the line of scrimmage, then it's going to either be Mac Jones or Trey Lance. And I heard all of what you said. And if you talk to people that have coached with him, if you heard him discuss the values of what he sees in the throwing motion, I mean, there's a lot of teams in the National Football League that have a real concern about Justin Fields' throwing motion. And there is a huge disconnect between most people in the league on where they see Justin Fields. You happen to see him much higher. But I think it's a little bit like valuing art. Unless you really understand what the coach is looking for. And I didn't base my pick on Mac Jones being there at three based on Peter Schrager. I based it on what people have told me that have been in the league, and I haven't been with Kyle Shanahan. And if you were to ask anybody who has been with Kyle, in the room, who we would pick, 99% of them would say Mac Jones is the guy.
Yeah, I will tell you, Matt, you and I on Primetime Action, the night of the Niners trading up to three for that haul. And by the way, what Drew was saying is correct. I mean, the line on number three keeps flip-flopping day after day from Mac Jones to Justin Fields at this point in terms of who's the favorite. So many more things more bettable at this point. But Matt, you and I, our first reaction was, they're drafting anybody but Mac Jones, but that was more of an assessment. Doesn't mean we don't like Mac Jones. That was more of an assessment of what we believe to be the game of the draft and where you could have otherwise gotten Mac Jones. Is that fair?
Right. And I mean, listen, I very well could be wrong. I think it's Justin Fields as well. I very well could be wrong. It could be Mac Jones. If it is Mac Jones, then I think one thing will be for certain, they overpaid for it because they definitely didn't have to go to three to get Mac Jones. And so I definitely think at the end of this, if it isn't Justin Fields and it's Mac Jones, then they likely overpaid for it. But I mean, you know, look, we look at Justin Fields here, and this is a guy, him and Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence is a guy that no one's ever wavered on. He has been the guy that everyone says is going to be the next guy, the next generational talent. Justin Fields was ranked ahead of Trevor Lawrence in one of the scouting services coming out of high school. Trevor Lawrence was ranked ahead of Justin Fields in the other. They come out, everybody is talking about how good these guys are in college. If Justin Fields had not played this season like a Ja'Marr Chase didn't, then we would be arguing right now who the number one overall pick in the draft would be. Should it be Justin Fields or should it be Trevor Lawrence?
No, he wouldn't.
That's what we would be arguing right now.
No, he wouldn't. They were
literally mentioned in the same sentence every single sentence for two years.
But the people that are mentioning it don't know what they're talking about. It's like you can't use a false narrative to support a narrative. Like you're asking people, it's like saying, well, this guy was the best player coming out of high school running back, so we should talk about him. Huh? It's about their career, what they do on the field. Like that doesn't value it. That's not how people in the National Football League build a draft board based on the conversation. Justin Fields has always been. Have you talked to anybody at Georgia about Justin Fields? Why he transferred? What happened? Do you understand how Jake Fromm beat him out? I mean, I don't understand it, but do you? I don't understand how that happened, but it did. But my point here is simply this. Look, I'm not going to debate over it because, if it's Justin Fields, then I'm completely wrong. But I think the reality of it is anybody who thinks that we would have a conversation between Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence this summer, we're not watching the same tape. We're not watching the same tape. We're not watching the same game of football. That was never going to be the case. That was never going to be the case. And so for me, it's like, look, he played his senior year. You watched him. He did his thing. And you go on. Here's what I don't understand. Mac Jones did more at Alabama. And if I were picking at three, I would take Sewell, the tackle. So let me get that out of the way. I'm not in love with any of the quarterbacks. I want to make this perfectly clear. I'm not defending Mac Jones here. But I think there's a real bias going on here. That, you know, Mac Jones, every Alabama player will openly tell you without even asking the question, who's a better player, Tua or Mac Jones? Absolutely Mac Jones. Not even close. They changed the offense for Mac Jones. They throw the ball downfield more for Mac Jones. They did more things to fit his game that was more conducive to the pro game than anything. And now I know we're not allowed to say a bad word about Tua, but you didn't think Tua was a bad pick at the fourth pick in the draft last year. But yet you think the third pick is too rich. When Kyle Shanahan, I'm told, thought that there's going to be teams that trade up into the top five, namely New England, namely Carolina, maybe Denver, to get Mac Jones, and he wanted to beat him to the punch. Now, that could be all wrong, but that's the conversation.
I will go ahead and let this be known for the rest of the podcast. I've talked to no head coaches. I've talked to no player personnel people. I have no one in any NFL offices. So all of this definitely comes from opinion and things that I've you know, gotten along the way. I think there's a fundamental disagreement as to how good Justin Fields was in college. There is a lot of high-level grading systems out there. And again, I understand they're not in the NFL offices, but Pro Football Focus is pretty highly regarded. He had a 92.4 passing grade through them, deadly accurate, all of the, everything that they're saying.
Have you ever seen the corners that Pro Football Focus grades and where they end up grafted and how they play? Like, I'm just telling you that this phenomenon about Pro Football Focus, if they were so right on quarterbacks, then why is all of them getting blown, all of the picks blown? Like, do you even know who does the quarterbacks for Pro Football Focus? Like, who grades them? Like, I just don't understand. Like, I mean, I want to be argumentative on a podcast, but I'm just not going to, you know, like, I don't understand how people can kill Mac Jones and then in the same sentence,
I don't think
talk about Tua. No,
I don't
like
think
he's
we're
the greatest
him.
Quarterback. No, but he, no but people, but
I think
Tua
is
overrated. Tua went four.
Think,
nobody complains about
think,
Tua going four.
Jalen Hurts might end up being a better quarterback ultimately than Tua.
He might be.
But realistically, I just have a tough time having seen only film, talked to no one, that not ranking them sort of in the consensus ranking, which was Lawrence, Wilson, Fields, Lance, Jones. And Jones at fifth, to me, I completely concede that what he did at last year in Alabama was awesome, but it was legitimately one of the best offensive systems that we've ever seen in college football ever. He had one of the most competent offensive lines that you could ask for. His weapons he was throwing to were, you know, future all-pro NFL players. Like it was the perfect storm. He didn't have to do much. He was in a very comfortable situation. And to me, I don't know that he has an NFL body. Personally, I think he needs to put on a ton of weight to stay healthy. I think if you put him behind the San Francisco offensive line and he takes shots from NFL players, I'm worried. I'm very much worried about. God, sorry, guys, I got an emergency alert. I'm worried about him picking up injury in the same breath that I was worried about Joe Burrow last year going to Cincinnati. Whereas with Fields, at least the durability question's not there for me. And the throwing motion is a very interesting wrinkle that I haven't heard anyone bring up before. And if, you know, Shanahan, obviously an absolute offensive guru, situation and where you land as a quarterback matters almost as much as talent, in my opinion, in terms of if you are going to ultimately be a top 10 quarterback in this league. And any quarterback lands in Shanahan's system, you are already at the head of the curve of finding success. I think there's no doubt about that. But I do, if Fields ends up in a decent situation as well, and Jones has a pretty clear ceiling in the same way Jared Goff did with the Rams, I could see this ultimately being a very stressful situation for Shanahan and Lynch long-term with the San Francisco organization, considering what they gave up to move up to this spot.
It's going to be fascinating. We're going to give people some bets here. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole anymore because we could do an hour on this. But I will just say, I think the Mac Jones, you know, being surrounded by players is valid. I think Justin Fields being surrounded by nothing but the best players in the country argument is valid too. We don't have a plethora of Alabama and Ohio State quarterbacks succeeding in the NFL. That could change with these two guys. But by the way, I will tell you that Trevor Lawrence, and I know this will make your head explode, perhaps, Michael, but the last two, you know, biggest stages, and then one in the national finals, one in the national semifinals, I walked away from those Trevor Lawrence games and I was like, I don't know, you know? And he was surrounded by great players too. So, you know, I may live to eat those words for sure. Maybe there are certain things I don't understand about Trevor Lawrence, but I'm not 100%. By the way, Zach Wilson, there's a lot of questions about Zach Wilson, right? So your point is right that the questions about all of them, But as far as the draft is concerned, I guess 1 week from tonight, we'll find out who, in fact, the Niners do pick at three. And then what happens after that, four through six? I mean, that's an even bigger question. Will Atlanta trade out? Will they stay and draft Kyle Pitts? Will they stay and draft Sewell? If Atlanta trades out, you would assume it's for a fourth quarterback. Then what happens at five? Will the Bengals take Sewell to protect Joe Burrow? Will they take Ja'Marr Chase if Joe Burrow is in their ear about it, his former teammate at LSU? At six, you have to figure Ja'Marr Chase can't go past six. So let me just ask it this way, and I've asked this of all of you in some different form on radio this week. What do you think we do know? Give me the one draft prop out there, and Ja'Marr Chase going under 6.5 triggers that for me, because I think we do know that, assuming Miami stays where they are fielding phone calls as well. Is that the play you like the most? Michael, we'll start with you, or is there another one? Is it about offensive players? What do you think you know for sure?
I think Kyle Pitts going below 5.5 is the one I do know. Now, I say that with Atlanta not trading that pick, which I don't think they'll do. But I think Kyle Pitts in Atlanta it makes the most sense to me. I think Cincinnati at five, I think it's Sewell, but I wouldn't say it's a lock. So I don't like Sewell under 6.5 as a lock, as something that I know. It makes too much sense not to pick Sewell at six, at five. At six, I agree with you on Chase. But, you know, I've seen these drafts where everybody talks offensive line, wide receiver, then offensive lineman get there. So if Pitts, if Sewell is there at six, how do they not take him? So for me, I mean, those are really the ones that I feel the most comfortable with as it relates to some of the props. I think Justin Fields, for me, after four, at 3.5 or above is for me a really good pick. I don't know where I put Trey Lance in that.
Matt, same question.
I think my favorite one that I have in pocket right now is just total wide receivers over 4.5. I mean, again, we understand each mock draft is a person's opinion, and each mock draft has certain people with different type of information. But if we do kind of go and we look at these wide receivers in these mock drafts, like, you know, Steve Palacios has six in his, Sam Monson has seven, Kuiper has six, McShay has six, Brugler has five, Ryan Wilson from CBS has five, Sharp Football has six. So, like, there isn't any sort of respected mock draft out there that has only four wide receivers going in the first round. Now, it's not a bet for every bankroll, because you do have to lay about, I think at this point it's gotten up to like 250 or 260. I got it, fortunately, a little bit earlier. I think I got it at 220. But, you know, again, if you do have that type of bankroll, what we do know for sure, I mean, I think anyone's arguing that Chase, Smith, Waddle, and Moore seem to be the consensus guys that are definitely going in the first. We see a lot with Bateman going in the first, and the most of them have Bateman and Moore going in the first. Terrace Marshall moving into a lot of the first rounds as well. And then even, you know, again, the Sam Monson Pro Football Focus has seven. He has Rondale Moore from Purdue going in the first. So, I mean, there's at least a good number of guys there that we could make sense for all of them going in the first round. And so I really do like the over 4.5 a lot.
Yeah, I grabbed that one. I had minus 250, so I was willing to lay. A lot of these, by the way, I've laid ridiculous. You and I think, have Chase under 6.5 laid, or was it first wide receiver drafted? I laid minus, there it is, first wide receiver to be drafted, minus 550. I have no problem. Yeah. I just got an under 1.5 on tight ends. Kyle Pitts, and prove me wrong, I just laid minus 380 on. So that's the other thing about these drafts. You lay prices in a way that you would never, I don't know about never, but most likely not be willing to lay in actual, you know, sporting events. Drew, you had the same answer, did you not, with the wide receivers, or was it something else? Offensive players, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the same bet, effectively.
Yeah.
The macro trend in the NFL is pretty clear. We're running more three wide receiver sets. That means two things. You need wide receiver bodies to absorb those targets. And you need a better offensive line because you're putting more stress on them by not giving them as much tight end help. Like, that's the macro trend that you're seeing across most offenses that are being run in the NFL right now. And on top of that, you have a bumper crop of tackles and wide receivers in this year's draft. And so the likelihood that we see, you know, 6 to 7 offensive linemen is high. The likelihood that we see, 5 to 6 wide receivers is high. And then I think, you know, almost without with almost certainty, you're going to see five quarterbacks and one tight end. So right there, you know, you're flirting with 18, 19 offensive players. And then one surprise of, one running back, potentially two running backs have been, commonly mocked lately. That would put you over the top. So offensive players over, I think, is still quite solid, although we've seen a ton of movement in that in the last 48 hours. So it's getting to close to the place where I think, they've about settled on fair price. The rest of the top 10 and the interesting things to talk about and the high confidence picks just aren't really there this year. I agree with Mike that Kyle Pitts as an under play makes a ton of sense because I do think Atlanta is going to be stuck at four and best player available at that point in time would be Kyle Pitts. The Bengals, I think Sewell versus Chase is pretty much a coin flip at this point. Depending on which day you happen to be cruising, the draft information space, the Bengals have either decided one or the other, and depending on which source. I can make a case that the Bengals, having invested a lot of first round draft capital over the last handful of years in offensive line with relatively little return, and then Mike Brown going out and signing Riley Reiff, albeit not a great player, but giving him money to come in and play tackle, is probably enough of a enough of a sway that if I'm the Dolphins and I covet Jamar Chase, I'm sweating them making that fifth pick because I would maybe make it 51% Chase, 49% Sewell at this moment. And, it's possible that the Dolphins moved up back into that sixth spot with no, recognizing that between Pitts, Sewell, and Chase, you have three future all pros. And one of those guys is going to fall to us. We don't really care who. But just kind of the way that roster is constructed, I think they'd need more offensive weapons. And if they end up with Sewell instead of Pitts and Chase, I think they may have a little bit of regret for what they gave up to go from 12 to 6.
Is Patrick Surtain to Dallas at 10 the player and team you've seen the most matched in mocks, Matt?
Yeah. This one, I actually, there's a site you can go to that aggregates all these things. And basically, he has been, from the beginning of March until yesterday, he had been mocked to the Cowboys in 65% of the mock drafts out there. And then the ones that weren't, it was Caleb Farley. So, I mean, it's basically corner for the Cowboys in basically every single one of these mocks that are getting put out there. It was either Surtain or Caleb Farley in just about every one of them. I mean, they were 21st against the pass DVOA, 27th coverage grade. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense here. They went and they did offense last year. You come back first round this year and get a corner in there. And being a passing league, as Drew mentioned, I mean, being a passing league, you either pass rushers or guys that can cover. And so it makes a lot of sense for him. I think the under 10.5, which is still available out there, is pretty viable for him. I think him being the first defensive player taken is pretty viable as well. I think that whenever you kind of look at how, again, there's likely to be a trade that we're not thinking about that's going to happen somewhere along the way before it gets to the Cowboys. But, as we sit right now, at least, if you kind of go through and you peg these things down, it looks like he could be the first defensive player taken as well.
Michael, let me ask it this way. What's the team, and you know these guys as well as anybody, what's the team that you always go into these drafts and you're like, this is the team most likely to do something stupid?
The Bengals don't take the offensive tackle. That qualifies as stupidity. I mean, they just watched the Super Bowl. I know Jamar Chase is a great, nice player, and I think he'd be on. But Sewell, you're talking about a Pro Bowl left tackle for 12 years. Seriously, you're not going to take that and protect your quarterback? I mean, there's no way that doesn't make sense. So, and then I think lately the way the Giants have behaved, I don't think they behave in a manner that's typical to what they do. They've been all over the place. I mean, just take this for example. I mean, they go ahead and pay a ton of money to sign Adoree Jackson, who I liked coming out in the draft. But had they traded a 7th-round pick to Tennessee, who was offering Adoree Jackson for a 7th if, right? They were ready to give him to you. They would have saved $14 million if they make that trade. So they just told you the 7th is more valuable than $14 million. Tell me how that makes sense.
Interesting.
Because they would have taken the contract of Adoree Jackson, which owed them $10 million, as opposed to give them $24 million.
What should they draft at 11? Wideout?
Oh no, they you know, they just signed Golladay and paid him $20 million. I mean, you draft another wideout. I mean, how much you got to have at the position? They still have Sterling Shepard. They still have Slayton playing for them. I'm not saying they're great. They have no right side of their offensive line. Look at their offensive line. You know, they signed a kid from Houston last year. I mean, who played for Houston last year, who wasn't very good. Fulton, Zach Fulton. You know, they don't have a right tackle. They have a kid who was a college free agent at right tackle. They can't function as an offense without it. You know, they're really in trouble there.
Let me go through some of the, let me go through all of the draft bets that I have made so far. And I don't know if we can show these on the screen, but Justin Fields, I have at the second overall pick and at the third overall pick. Second overall pick, 8-1. Third overall at +140. I didn't get the best number on third. But yes, I played him at second too, because I'm not 1,000% convinced that Zach Wilson is going to the Jets. Then some of the ones we've talked about. Over 17.5 offensive players drafted, -170. Over 4.5 wideouts drafted, -250. These are all bets that I already have in pocket. Ja'Marr Chase, first wideout to be drafted, -550. Mentioned that earlier. Willing to lay the hammer on that one. Then I have Chase under 6, Chase under 6.5 at various prices, -250 and -240 respectively. Terrace Marshall, who would be the second LSU player and the second LSU wideout to go in the first half. I didn't get him at the best number here at Circa. I was 80 minutes late to the desk here at 9 a.m. on Saturday. I only got here at 10:20, but he was the one player where the line, I still betted after the line moved a little bit. So I went Terrace Marshall under 30.5, figuring the Ravens at 27 were really the fulcrum for him. Pitts under 5.5 a couple times. Sewell over 5.5, because I do think the Bengals will mess around and not pick him. And then Mac Jones under 9.5, just because I like that line that they set at 9.5. There's two others I made more recently. Under 1.5 on tight ends, I laid -380 at the South Point. And just now, beforehand, and Michael, I'll ask you about this, I just bet the Chargers at 13, or wherever they make their first pick, currently slotted at 13, to draft an offensive lineman first. I only laid -120. I haven't seen a mock out there that doesn't have them drafting an offensive lineman. How do you feel about the Chargers?
Well, I think the Chargers definitely drafted an offensive lineman. I don't know why you won't give up on the Jets. They're definitely taking Wilson. I mean, that's been in the cards. Once he passed their physical, once they felt comfortable, that's when they traded Darnold. The other thing I think you're going to get bit on is Terrence Marshall. He had a tough time with his physical. He has slid down the board. I would say right now he's probably the 8th receiver on the board based on medical.
Yeah, I made the Justin Fields pick a while back, so I probably, to your point, wouldn't have made that today. Obviously.
No, I'm Terrence Marshall, the wide receiver from LSU.
Oh, no, I'm saying Zach. I was saying the Justin Fields second pick, in other words, I wouldn't have made today. Pardon me. Terrence Marshall under 30.5. That was the one exception I made in terms of movement, but your point is noted. Drew, what else have you bet?
I got ahead of the Farley steam on the over. His medicals are a concern. I think he's going to slide into the 20s. Similar, and the flip side of that is JC Horn I have a tough time seeing him go past 13, honestly. And realistically, you brought up Patrick Surtain to the Cowboys earlier. I get it. That's a great fit. I get it that the mock drafters look at need for the Cowboys and just slot him there because they evaluate Surtain as the best option at cornerback. So obviously he'll go first, but I actually haven't really seen any true connection that Cowboys are, all in on Surtain. I could see them look for Horn. I think there are a lot of minds in the NFL that see Horn as a better long-term prospect at cornerback than Surtain. Similarly, the Eagles need a cornerback. They could take Horn at 12. I've heard rumors that that both the Chargers and the Arizona Cardinals are very high on Horn as well, and have been making calls recently to try to trade into the range where he would be available. So I think the Horn market is getting hot, and he will go earlier than people are mocking currently. Similarly, Rashawn Slater, the second offensive lineman off the board, I think is going to go a lot higher than his original line that was posted. I bet pretty heavily into under 13.5, under 11.5. And I could see the landing spots for Slater all over the place between 7 and 11. You get the feeling that a lot of times you have GMs who are somewhat on the rocks or a little bit under pressure And you know, you can do one of two things. You can make a risky pick and take a quarterback of the future, in which case you kind of start the clock on your tenure, or you can take an offensive tackle, and that's a lot safer play. And I can see a lot of kind of, you know, got a lot of guys in the range of 7 to 11, you know, opt for the latter there. There's been some, you know, some politicking for Slater that he potentially is as good, if not better prospect than Sewell. I don't see that, but if someone else does and they're in that range, then he could go a little bit earlier than people are expecting as well.
Mateo, what you got?
I have, as we've talked ad nauseum, I got 4.5 wide receivers first round. I've got Justin Fields under 4.5 as opposed to 3.5. So it does give me an extra chance there. If he doesn't happen to go 3, which I also have Justin Fields going number 3 pick overall, but if he doesn't, someone getting antsy and trying to trade with the Falcons to get him at 4. So I do have him under 4.5. I have Jamar Chase under 6.5. I have Jamar Chase first wide receiver taken. I have Micah Parsons as first linebacker taken. And this is based off of absolutely no intel other than the fact that 92% of every single mock draft that has been put out there has Micah Parsons as a first linebacker taken. They could be wrong. There's still an 8% chance, and that means 8% of the time it doesn't happen, or trades or any kind of anything like that. But I was willing to lay the juice on that one. I have Cowboys to take a defensive player as their first pick. And I did go ahead and take Surtain under 10.5 as well. Drew makes some good points. It is all over the place as far as what people seem to be the smoke around the Cowboys. Could be Surtain, could be Farley, could be Horn even with that. But Surtain being the one that at least is most often mentioned, I did go ahead and go there with that one as well. I've been looking around, and I think this is one of those ones, guys, that I think we kind of alluded to it at least a little bit here at the beginning. But and Drew, I think you might have even said it. But as far as value goes, now, as we sit a week out and looking, I mean, unless we get some sort of wave of information, unless we get some sort of, you know, insider stuff that seems to be, you know, accurate or whatever, I'm having a hard time pulling much more out of this. I've been digging through this as much as I possibly can over the last week and a half. And I like the ones that I've got, and I've liked the ones that I've got in pocket, but I don't think I'm going to be betting just for the hell of it and just for the sake of betting here. And I don't think that there's a lot to really pull out of this anymore.
I agree with that overall sentiment at this point. I will say this. I'm rooting for comedy at this point. The three most comical things I think that could happen. The Raiders drafting Jalen Waddle at 17, just based on sheer speed at wideout, that they would go crazy again. The Packers drafting a quarterback obviously would be ridiculous. The Cowboys trading up for Kyle Pitts, which we've kind of heard a buzz or two about, would be absolutely ridiculous too in their attempt to have maybe the number one offense and the number 32 defense in the NFL. That would be ridiculous.
They might have that anyway.
They might have that anyway. That's right. Michael, I did want to ask a couple random questions though, before we close this out though. 24, Matt and I talked about this on Primetime Action last night. I had Warren Sharp on a numbers game first thing this week, and he went off on how ridiculous it would be if the Pittsburgh Steelers drafted a running back at 24. And one of the things that I'm very cognizant of is, listen, the draft is an inexact science to begin with. As you point out, I mean, like the people who are picking themselves don't necessarily know how these players will pan out, let alone those of us who then chime in afterwards. But one of the things that I do feel like I can comment about is the game of the draft, where you ought to pick players and where you ought not. 24, though, if the Steelers drafted Najee Harris, I can't see myself getting that worked up about it. He was really worked up about them drafting a running back at 24. Where do you stand on that?
You know, I think it depends on the value of the board. I mean, you know, if they had an offensive lineman that they felt really good about, you know, then certainly you could say, well, we could trade back up in the second and we'll get one of these backs. I think it's easy for guys to be critical of where you take a guy. It really matters how they play. I mean, Harris is a really good back. I mean, I'm not in love with drafting running backs in the top 10. I think once you get past that, you've got to look at the player and what he contributes. You know, if they want Ben, I mean, it would make sense if they drafted a quarterback, because Ben's not going to play next year at a high level. He didn't play at a high level this year. So, you know, can they get the quarterback of their future? If there's a guy there they like, they should take it. I doubt if there'll be a guy there that they like. but they got to try to get a good player on their team somewhere. And running back and offensive line are the two places that they have the biggest holes, along with defensive line. I think the Steelers are going to take a giant step backwards. To me, I think the one thing we've missed on with the Cowboys is there's a lot of conversation the Cowboys taking an offensive lineman. Because Tyrod Smith is not healthy, they could move Collins over to left tackle and they need a right tackle.
And the Cowboys, obviously, their probably most impactful draft ever was them choosing not to take Johnny Manziel and going offensive lineman twice some years ago. That really changed around that franchise. Drew, where do you stand on 24? I'm just curious about if they pick Najee Harris, because how many times did we watch a Bama game and we're like, this dude, Mac Jones is great, Devontae Smith is great, but Najee Harris is the best player on the field.
I'm kind of in the same boat where, you know, there's, it's easy to make a case that, picking a running back in the first round is a mistake. It's pretty easy to point to teams that have done this in the recent past. I'll think of Rashad Penny, Sonny Michel, there are a lot of examples of, even last year, Clyde Edwards-Helaire for the Chiefs, would a little bit of offensive line depth been a better call in pick 32? Probably. For the kind of the current state of the NFL, I want a running back who's got good hands, who's, got multiple ways he can impact a game, not just via the handoff. And I want a guy that can get the short yardage. But you can find those sort of guys, in the free agency market, via trade for low impact draft capital or in the second round of the draft. And so I wouldn't be shocked if we see running back slide in general. However, Najee Harris does stand out as a pretty unique talent and a huge character guy as well for a lot of locker rooms. And we know the Steelers build through culture through a large degree. And if they feel like Najee Harris fits their culture and all of the best offensive linemen are off the board by the time they're picking, I could see that happening. And I'm not really going to be especially critical of them. Especially critical if they do that. But I also say their offensive line in Pittsburgh is in such a poor state that it really doesn't matter who's running the ball. I don't think you're going to get a ton of production. So I would say, hold your horses if you're in like the dynasty fantasy draft situation or something like that, expecting he's going to make a huge impact for the Steelers in year one.
Drew, you said off air, you said you're saving something for the podcast. Did you already get that out there?
Well, I think we've talked about most of the good stuff, okay. But just a couple of other guys that I've seen on the rise. There are a couple, as you go down the board, there's a couple of guys that I think there's still some value on. I'm getting the sense that there's a pretty decent buzz around Asante Samuel Jr. I have his under 41.5, and I can see that number's already on the move into the 30s. Cornerback, it's a tricky position because there's a shortage of good cornerback talent across the league. There are some good cornerbacks in this draft. But expecting to get a guy that's going to make a year one impact at cornerback is pretty ambitious. You saw some pretty talented cornerbacks last year really not be able to do much in year one. And it wouldn't shock me if teams are a little bit hesitant to use round one capital on cornerbacks this year. But Asante Samuel Jr. looks like a solid player to me and a long-term contributor for a defense that's in need of a cornerback. And I think he's going to be sought after either at the end of round one or the top of round two. And then a couple of linebackers that I've gotten, I've heard the two Miami edge rushers are falling pretty quickly. Both Jalen Phillips and Gregory Rousseau, for whatever reason, seem to be lower on draft boards than sort of the talent evaluators would have thought. Those guys are falling fast. But a couple of these linebackers do seem to be picking up steam. The Tulsa linebacker Zaven Collins is one. The Kentucky linebacker Jamin Davis is one. And Micah Parsons, I'm not entirely sold on, is going to go at LB1. So I'm going to take a couple of long-term swings there and take both Jamin Davis and Zaven Collins as LB1.
Oh, okay. That is really the wild card of this draft. Gil Brandt, who's seen decades worth of drafts, was saying the other day that this will be the strangest draft because we have so many players, not so many, but there's a handful of really top players. You just mentioned Michael Parsons, Jamar Chase falls under this category, obviously, as well, that took the year off. And so you don't know. Panay Sewell, right? You think you know what you're getting. You don't exactly know what you're getting. Matt alluded to it earlier with Justin Fields. Had he not played, I don't know how we'd be talking about him. Last thing, Michael, we leave with you, because the very first thing you said was, look at certain mock drafts where guys know certain franchises better than others. You alluded to it. You know the New England Patriots better than anyone. What do you think they do?
I think they, you know, if they have so many draft picks, I think if there's a receiver that slips into the 10, 11, and 12 range, I think they go get them. They'll try to go get them. I think that could make sense if they felt like they could. If they can't and they stuck at 15, I think they would look for the best offensive lineman or trade back and take a receiver, a second receiver, a guy that maybe is not a lot of people think is a high first rounder that they would take at the bottom of the first. So I think those are their options. I think that's what they're looking for. I don't think they would trade up to get a quarterback. I don't think that they fit. I don't think they fit into the narrative of Justin Fields. I think it would be if they traded, if they wanted to, they would trade to get someone like a Trey Lance that they could develop within a year. I don't see the mechanical element of Justin Fields fitting how they throw the ball. If you sat down with Tom Brady and studied quarterback throwing, and you asked Tom Brady to critique Justin Fields' throwing motion, Tom would have a dissertation on it. And I've listened to Tom talk about quarterback's mechanics and his throwing and the elbow. And I think that's probably the biggest concern that teams that value the mechanics of the quarterback have with Justin.
It's very interesting. We'll all know the answers to all these questions 1 week from tonight. Appreciate it. Michael Lombardi, who just got off the Lombardi
Thanks,
line.
Guys.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Lombardi line.
Thanks, Gil.
GM Shuffle, Gridiron Genius,
Thanks,
the name of the book. Thank you, sir. Drew Didzik from the Deep Dive podcast also contributed to VSiN and, of course, at NBC Sports Edge as well. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate the Circa backdrop, man. They appreciate it as well that you do that. And we'll talk next week. Matt Brown from Primetime Action, who I will see momentarily to do our thing. By the way, the finest radio show there ever was. That's what I'm billing it now as.
I agree. I like that.
Yeah. It's nothing to live up
and
to.
Sometimes TV show.
And sometimes TV show, you know, when there's football being played. Thank you all, man. Appreciate it so much. We look forward to the draft. Thank you all for listening to the Beating the Book podcast. Good luck with all your draft props from all of us.